Welcome, welcome to another episode of Big Fish Radio. This is Captain Barry, joined by the two co-hosts, Robert Lukowitz and Alexandra B. Fishin.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you today?
Fantastic. How about you, Robert?
I'm doing pretty well. So what are we talking about today?
We're going to do something a lot of people actually from up north love to. I think it's a lot of people's bucket list fish up from up north. I know a lot of friends who want to come down just to catch this fish. And Alex is giving me this confirmation because I feel like this is still on her bucket list.
It is still on my bucket list.
See, I knew it.
I haven't even gotten a little one.
Really?
Yeah, so I want my first one to be
a big one?
One that feels like a couch.
Right, oh, like a couch. Okay, yeah. So the big suspense fish, if we haven't built that up enough, is a Goliath grouper, formerly known as a Jewfish. And we won't get into the politics of that.
No.
And so, Alex, you've never caught a Goliath grouper? And your short stay here in Florida, you've only been here for a couple months.
Right. No,
I didn't mean that as like, I can't believe you haven't caught one.
No, I was just going to suggest to people to write in to Fish and Franks and ask Robert why it's Jewfish and Goliath.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Great. I still call them both a Jewfish and a Goliath grouper.
Yeah.
I've got no problems with that.
Yeah, when they changed the name, honestly, like for like the first 2-3 years, I kept saying Jewfish, Jewfish, Jewfish. It was hard to like.
It's what they'll always be known to me as. I mean, yeah. That's all good.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is that the Jewfish slash Goliath grouper is kind of one of those really cool fish species in the making, you know, as far as history goes from the game and fish. You know, years ago they protected the American alligator and it made a wonderful comeback. And back in the late 80s, they protected the Goliath grouper and made no more commercial or recreational harvest of it because it was decimated to the point of almost becoming extinct. And nowadays, it's an actual extremely targetable species. It's still protected, but in Florida state waters, they actually will allow you to target them for catch and release, basically for sport fishing fun. But you can't do it in federal waters. So on the Gulf Coast of Florida, it's illegal to try to target them outside of 9 miles.
9 miles.
Okay. Oh,
and a
really?
Lot of, and a lot of people are not aware of that.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah. On the East Coast, it would be 3 miles. But on the Gulf Coast, where our marker line is 9 miles.
Interesting.
Did you know that, Barry?
Because
yeah,
of the
oh, I did
because
know that.
Of the depth that the water is?
No, it's just it's a federal it becomes federal regulations at that point because the fish is considered a species of special concern or endangered. Anytime they put them on any type of federal protection, laws change significantly.
Okay.
So
and for these Goliath grouper, I believe the world record is like currently around it's like 600 pounds or in that 600-pound range. Is this
high,
correct?
High 600. It's like 680 or something like that.
Gotcha. So closer to 7.
Yeah.
But in that high. I don't know the year that was harvested, but they have been in the state of Florida. They've been completely banned from harvesting in 1995. Right, Robert?
Was it 95?
I believe so.
Yeah, it might have been. I thought it was earlier than that.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter. I mean, they've still been protected for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the it's just a really cool comeback story for that fish,
yeah.
You know. And nowadays, you, instead of going out and catching, you know, 10-pounders or 20-pounders, a 100-pounder is pretty much considered almost small.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird.
A 100-pound
grouper say,
is a dink, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. You know, it's one of our few groupers that actually needs the inshore estuaries to grow up. So it relies on the mangrove shorelines for its babies to grow up. So we'll catch them in the canals and in the harbor, sometimes up to a couple 100 pounds. But as they get bigger and more sexually mature, they tend to move out along our coastline to some of the nearshore reefs.
Wow. Wow. That's
do you know, does a grouper grow fairly quickly?
I honestly don't know the growth
rate
on them.
Are those really large grouper that we're talking about going after today, are they, you know, 100 years old?
No. No, actually, they'd be, most of them are probably less than 30 years old.
Still, that's
right. So, for us,
crazy.
I would say, wouldn't you say, Robert, that like a huge Goliath grouper is a grouper that's 400 pounds approximately and above?
Yeah, a true 400-pounder is a tough one to come by.
Gotcha.
I think a world-class fish over once you hit that 350 mark, now you're starting to really do that 10-pound bass club type material.
Right. Good comparison to like a 40-inch snook kind of club. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Exactly. 25-pound snook, 10-pound bass. You know, I think that 350-pound plus mark is when you start to exceed getting into some quality fish, because a lot of people way overestimate the weight of these fish. Even the books will tell you that they reach weights of over 800 pounds, and yet the world record's just under 7. So, you know, people definitely over-exaggerate this fish.
Gotcha.
You know, and not knocking it, because, I mean, still a 200-pound
Yeah, 200-pound fish is still is huge.
You know, it's still a giant fish.
Yeah, definitely.
But to target those really large ones requires definitely a lot of patience. You're going to go through quite a few smaller quote-unquote fish, you know, and it's hard to believe that you can say under 300 pound is a smaller fish.
Yes definitely. So when we talk about within 9 miles and targeting them here on this coast, what would you say this is going to be like, unlike any other fish you target, because the tackle is going to be like unheard of, it's going to be ridiculous, the tackle that you use for these things. What would be your setup to catch one of these Goliath groupers, Robert?
Honestly, my setup's different than most people's. You know, I use a 50 wide international.
Okay.
But I've only got, it's either 80 or 100 pound test line on it. That's
what?
My main fishing line.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Mono or braid?
It's mono.
What? Okay. Go, keep going. That's interesting.
The way I fish for them is a little different than most people.
Okay.
You know, Jewfish, Goliath grouper, still a grouper no matter what. They're very much a structure-oriented fish. You usually don't find them just out in the open, so they're going to be around wrecks, big pilings, stuff like that. But when I target them, I like to target them at any of the near-shore reefs or wrecks. But most people's way of fishing for them is to anchor right on top of the wreck, just like they're plain old grouper or snapper fishing all the time. And I found that I can land most of them on that 80 or 100 pound main fishing line by doing something just a little different, because they're dumb, they're greedy, and they're lazy fish, but they're very curious fish.
So they'll, like, come away from the structure,
they'll
is what you like to do?
Come away from the structure. So okay. I'll anchor 50 to 75 feet away from the structure.
Okay.
And chum pretty heavy, and basically I'm fishing for grunts, snappers, porgies, even the occasional gag grouper, red grouper will venture off a little bit over there to eat my bait. And as soon as usually one of my snappers or grunts gets eaten, that's when I'm putting a bait straight down below the boat.
Oh, so, and like, you fish, like, 50 to 75 feet away from the structure. You know Goliath grouper are there, but you're fishing for the other reef fish.
Yes.
And then when one of them that you're bringing up gets eaten by a Goliath grouper on the way up, because that's very common with how many there are, that's when you know those Goliath grouper have come towards the action of you catching these fish, and
right.
Now they're basically sitting under your boat, so you can pull out the lighter gear, which is 50 to 80-pound test, and drop straight down, because you know that you've brought the fish away from the structure.
Right, and I'm hoping that I'll be able to put the brakes on him fairly quickly before he makes it back to that reef and breaks me off. But I'm also not fishing it directly on the bottom. You know, I'm keeping it, let's say I'm fishing in 50 feet of water, I'm lowering my bait down about 30 feet down into the water column. So I'm 20 feet off the bottom and 50 to 75 feet away from the structure. Well, the first thing that fish usually wants to do is swim downward.
Exactly.
And at an angle, but mostly downward. So he's going to swim 20 feet down with a lot of drag on him and then try to swim 50 to 75 feet away with more drag on him, because now the line's got a bow or an arc to it. So I'm putting a great deal of pressure on that fish and hopefully be able to slow him down before he gets there. And I found that I've just been able to land more fish with that lighter line, because most people go out there with 300, 400, 500. I mean, even guys will run a 1,000-pound monofilament tied directly to their reel just because they think they have to have that to catch one, and then they use the power of the motor to do it, and I'd rather kind of mono a mono kind of thing to it.
Yeah, gotcha. Wow. That's interesting. Alex looked, she was like really like dissecting your rig. She's like, she's like thinking, I could see her eyes just like.
No, I do use a heavier leader. You know, I will use 300 pound or 400 pound monofilament for my leader.
Okay. How long of a section would you use?
About 6 feet.
Okay.
You know, nothing super long, but I want it in case that fish does get close to the structure. I can at least hopefully be able to have a little tug of war with him once he gets to that structure.
Yes.
But I don't use steel because there's still the likelihood of getting broken off. Because even those guys that are running 600-pound mainline, they still get broke off.
Yes.
I won't use steel because I don't want to leave that fish with a leash that he can get entangled with down there around all that structure, and then he's tied up down there and dies because he couldn't break free, versus using that monofilament leader. If he struggles enough, it's going to get shredded up against that structure that he's there against, and that mono will eventually cut through where he can swim off and have another good day.
Right. You just, if that possibility happens where he breaks off, you'd rather just have a hook in the fish's mouth with a piece of mono instead of like this heavy piece of steel that he could get entangled with and basically get stuck to the piece of structure with.
Right. And some people ask me, well, what if you hook a shark? Well, if I hook a shark and he bites through it, okay, that's fine, because I wasn't targeting him.
Exactly.
So I'm not heartbroken. Am I a little bummed out? Absolutely, because I wanted to see what it was, just like anybody else. But my ultimate goal was to try to land that Goliath grouper.
Yes. And believe it or not, using 300 or 400 pound mono as your leader, you can still hook sharks and land them with that. So that doesn't put it out of the question.
No, not at all.
And for your hook size, I bet a lot of listeners are going to be like really surprised by this, but what size hook are you going to use on this for these Goliath groupers?
Let's see. VMC and Mustad make two really good quality hooks that I like to use, and they're a circle hook. They're a 18-aught and a 20-aught, which is big, but not giant.
Yeah, 20-aught circle hooks. That's like, when people see those, like, in the shop, and when you hold them, pull them out, you're like, when would you ever need this? Like, you know? Yeah. You're like, oh, yeah.
Well, but we're using a really large bait, and plus on a really large Goliath grouper, they have a very large, giant gum line or almost lips that are super rubbery. And you need something with a big enough gap on it to kind of get around and into that really rubbery lip of theirs.
Exactly.
And plus, you're using anywhere from a 5 pound to 15 pound bait. You know, usually I'm using Jax as one of my most favorite baits to use.
Live or dead?
Doesn't matter.
Uh huh.
You know, they're usually not super picky, but Jax is my number one favorite bait of choice. Mm-hmm. You know, I will use ladyfish, I will use mullet. You know, I've used blue crabs because blue crabs, honestly, are their number one primary food source. You know, everyone gets upset and thinks that they're here to eat their fish off the reef. And yes, they're opportunistic feeders, so they're going to eat your fish that's hooked on a line. But their primary diet is actually crabs, stuff that's very slow moving.
I read that, like, they can, like, suck. You know how their suction pressure is? Mm-hmm. It's ginormous. If you're holding on a rod and you feel one eat like your live Jack Revolver or whatever, it sends a shockwave directly to your heart. You will stop and freeze and when they hit. But I know they use that suction and they can suck off like a ton of crabs off, let's say, a bridge piling.
Yeah.
It's not, they're just not going to go after one. They can just vacuum all the crabs off a piece of structure. It's that powerful of a suction feed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and the one thing I do with my circle hook also is that I will flatten out the barb a little bit, because it makes it much easier for getting that hook out of the fish's mouth, because their lip is so rubbery.
And so wide.
And
deep, yes.
It flexes so much when you're trying to pull that hook out. And if I can't get that hook out, I am going to cut him and let him have the jewelry. You know, I'm not going to risk damaging him to save, you know, a $2 or $3 hook. And, you know, I'd rather have him live another day and make someone else's dream come true.
Right. That's a solid point, because they are protected, and I have had it where keeping, like, just leaving the barb on, you don't think about it, but when it comes time to remove that hook, you want to, like, get it out as soon as possible and not deal with the fish that much, because they're so massive that they can, like, easily injure you. If you're over the boat holding it and trying to remove the hook, all it takes is one good head shake, and you can literally snap your wrist shove your arm into the gunwale of the boat. And you could, like, it's a lot of mass. So you don't want to be there fidgeting with the hook and trying to get it out because the barb just won't let go. You know, you want it to just remove the hook quickly, you know, get your picture quick if you want one, and then send him back on his way.
Right.
So I think that's a really actually good safety kind of procedure to do when you're targeting these big Goliath grouper.
Yeah.
Is it safe to get in the water? I see a lot of people jump in the water to get their picture taken with them. Is it safe to be around a large
a small one? It's not safe.
Right, because it's not safe to be, I guess, in the ocean in general.
Right.
Well, there's two sides of that make it unsafe. Is one, their dorsal spines on their back are anywhere from, I mean, let's take just a smaller jewfish at 200 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
His dorsal spine is going to be probably 2.5 to 3.5 inches long. Mm-hmm. And you get up next to him and he decides to flail or roll over, picture getting raked with 2 or 3 inch spikes across your body as he rolls.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just from one side to the other. Or worse yet, you get a wave or something that actually pushes you into him so it impales you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one bad scenario. The other bad scenario is a bull shark or a tiger shark have been known, and many videos and photographs of them coming up and devouring one boat side.
Right.
So with you in the water, you are taking two pretty significant risks. But the spines is more likely the risk than the shark attack, because usually it's on the smaller ones.
Yes. So it could be dangerous with the Goliath grouper itself because of those big spikes that Robert mentioned. But
it wouldn't try to eat you?
No, not at all. No, no? They're just trying to get away from you,
at that point, they're just wanting to fend for, you know, away.
They want to shake off and go straight back down.
Are they all gums or do they have any teeth?
Oh, they have some pretty big teeth.
Yeah.
Not like canine teeth. It's just very sharp little needle teeth. But when you start dealing with a fish that's a couple hundred pounds.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
They go right through like a construction work glove.
Yeah. There's much mass that when they move. And if your hands, because I've been in their mouth trying to move the hook, and they shake their head, and all it takes is them to graze your skin, and it just tears it apart.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
Yeah. They've got enough teeth where it's not something to handle barehanded and to be very careful with.
And to go back to your, like, point of, it actually happened to me this June. We were just a couple miles offshore, and after releasing about, like, a 200-pounder, I'm not exaggerating, he went straight to the bottom. This tiger shark, about 10-footer, no exaggeration, just kind of came right by the boat and was, like, circling. He came out of nowhere, and I think he was looking for that Goliath. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm glad I did not get in the water, because that tiger shark came right up to the boat.
Oh, absolutely.
He was, like, looking for something.
Yeah.
So.
And the only way to really target the largest one of them is you're going to weed through several smaller ones
mm-hmm.
while you're out there.
Right.
And when we talk smaller, they're going to be, I've had 80-pounders eat 10-pound jacks.
Yeah.
You know, I've had 350-pounders eat a 6-inch point-to-point blue crab.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no precise method to really targeting them for the absolute biggest one other than going out and basically hoping that you ate your Wheaties for the day or several days ahead of time and putting your baits down and play tug of war with several of them and have the best moment you possibly can.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, you've caught many, many of them, and you've taken people to catch many of them.
Yeah.
And you never know. I mean, and it's weird, so.
It's funny that you say that, too, because that same day that tiger came to the boat, it was 11 that day, and we had perfect baits on the way out. Like, we had stingrays with us, big stingrays, big mullet, big jack, everything. And on the 10th, I remember after 10 fish, we still hadn't caught, like, a big, big one. But we went through all our good baits, and we just started jigging up, like, 8-inch blue runners because they were so fired up down there. Mm-hmm. And the smallest blue runner we caught, or out of all the baits that we used, caught the biggest fish. And mm-hmm. I think it's because we weeded through all the smaller fish. And when I say smaller, they were all in that 200 to 300-pound range.
Right.
And then we had, like, this blue runner that was basically, the hook was half the size of the bait. And I'm like, all right, what the heck? We threw it down there, and that's where, like, this true, like, 400 or 500-pounder came on, was that little blue runner.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So you never really know how to exactly do it, but you just got to give it your best shot.
Yeah.
And having an 11 fish day, oh my gosh, I mean, that's pretty significant. You didn't have to move from one spot to another. You sat on the same.
And it was a small piece of structure. It makes no sense how there was that many on
this. What time of year was it?
June, May, June.
Okay. Well, June's when they start to move offshore onto the reefs to go do their beginning stages of their spawn. Mm. So that's why some of the nearshore reefs will get, the population will double, triple, or quadruple on some of these reefs out there with them, because they'll move from near inshore bridges and structures and head out there to do their annual spawn in June, July, and August, being their three best months for spawning purposes.
Oh, man.
You know, so it's, you know, that's one of the few things I've learned from dealing with the biologists, because we've tagged quite a few of the fish. They actually had one fish that migrated from Savannah, Georgia, all the way down to West Palm 3 years in a row.
Wow.
So they go to the same locations.
So, Alex, when are you going to catch your first big Goliath?
When are we going?
Better question.
Exactly.
That's a better, nice. That was quick.
Yeah. She's been waiting for that the whole time.
I know.
No. You know, it's an awesome fish. And like I said, you know, it's one of those things that people dream about and see about. And we're lucky that we live right here in Charlotte Harbor and Boca Grande, where when you usually see people on a fishing show fishing for them, it's usually right there in Boca Grande Pass at the old phosphate dock.
Yep. It's like so many episodes have been filmed there. Go ahead. Yep.
No, but it's just that it's funner for me to go to some of the nearshore reefs 3 miles out or 5 miles out and catch as many or more, and it's safer.
Yeah, I totally
agree. You
know,
fishing that pass and around that phosphate dock can get pretty sketchy and dangerous. So I like to go to an area that's not as heavily hit and a little bit easier, and definitely a lot more fun for any age angler at that point, because in that pass, you've got to have eyes all the way around you and be totally aware of what's going on.
100%, I agree.
I often hear them talking about Goliath in the phosphate docks. Is there just a large collection of Goliath grouper that live there, or are they just the same ones that are being caught over and over?
Both. Yeah. There's a lot of them that are caught over and over and over again because they just refuse to leave, because it's such a huge food source of food flushing out, and you're talking a 120-year-old trestle coming through. So those fish just hang out there waiting for that food to come to them, because they are kind of lazy by nature.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Big Fish Radio. Hope you guys found this talk about Goliath grouper interesting and useful.
Informational.
And maybe in the next episode, Alex will share her experience of her first big Goliath. And until next week, we'll see you then. You can check me out on tarponworld.com. And we'll see you guys next week.